Visions radio program this Sunday. And today we are talking employment. And we are talking human resources. And we know that employment has been a big topic the last few months because of COVID-19. And who better to discuss this topic than Miss Brittany Braffitt, president of HRMAP, Human Resources Management Association of Barbados. Welcome to the program, Ms. Braffitt.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so very much.
I'm kind of hoping that I got that acronym right.
Yes, HRMAP. Yes, correct.
Now, let's start. Now, the average person would probably not know what HRMAP is. So we'll start there. What is HRMAP?
So HRMAP is the National Human Resources Management Association. And I say national because there is no functioning regional HR association. So we are here to serve as not just a hub of information, but a hub of resources, consistent help for practitioners, for budding practitioners, and for persons who want to continue to keep the human resources profession alive and thriving in the island.
So how long has HRMAP been around? You mentioned that there's a new regional organization. So obviously that means that there is a need to not only take it locally, but regionally.
Yes, HRMAP has been around for many decades. And of course, my predecessors have helped to keep HRMAP around, but it continues only because of the help, really, and the assistance of our volunteer base.
What was the labor market like before COVID-19? Because this is a new reality, and sometimes we don't always consider, sometimes we don't remember what things were before, the present reality.
I think the labor market had quite a number of opportunities pre-COVID, and it still does have a number of opportunities. I think COVID has changed the way in which the opportunities are being presented, but I still think there are a number of opportunities that existed pre-COVID, exist post-COVID. I think one of the, obviously the biggest issue is a number of the entities and the institutions who would have been providing these opportunities, are suffering significantly from not just a loss in revenue, but of course a loss in projected revenue and actual revenue and all of these things. So the number of opportunities have reduced, but it's not to say that all opportunities have diminished. I think we've seen some industries, particularly some industries, have been harder hit. So I'd say pre-COVID, we really had a boom in tourism sector. We were looking forward to a fantastic summer. We're looking forward to a fantastic winter. We had heard many fantastic initiatives coming out of places like the BTMI and the Ministry of Tourism. And I think those are the places, when you look at industry-specific labor market impacts, those are the areas that you really see how COVID has hardest hit us in Barbados and across the region.
Now, we would have had crisis before. Nothing like COVID, but we have had storms, we have had hurricanes in the region last year and year before, and those would have been considered crises. In your experience as the president of HRMAP, would you have seen anything in your time that would have even compared to what is happening now?
Not quite, not even near. I'm still relatively young, so I always tell persons. When I look back, I'm literally only 29. So when I look back on things, I really only remember hurricanes. But as an avid reader, that's pretty much how I know, how worldwide pandemics have impacted labor markets before. So when you look at things like influenza, etc. So I think particularly for the current labor market, and where we have Gen Xers and Gen Yers, and we have totally new demographic coming into the labor market, they have never witnessed anything like this before. We may have seen, flooding in Louisiana a couple of years ago, but that was really concentrated to a specific area in the globe.
Yes.
We may have seen, hurricanes. And I actually saw many of my colleagues who would have went to school with me in sixth form and elsewhere, a lot of them coming from, you know, distraught situations where hurricanes may have impacted their home situation. But I couldn't relate to that because that had not happened here in Barbados. I think this is the first time for generations of persons who are currently in the workforce that there is actually a global impact. So even if something happened in Dominica, you could come to Barbados and vice versa, but not now.
No, obviously, an organization such as yours and human resources management in particular would have contingency plans, would have things that be put in place as a response to when something happens. Is it a case of activating systems that would help to deal with the present crisis, or do you have now to go and invent new systems to put in place for the present crisis?
I think it really depends on how prepared the organization is and how agile the organization is. I would have seen lots of larger organizations really be agile during the period. You know, they really facilitated the remote work very quickly, even prior to the national shutdown happening, et cetera. And we were talking about jobs and the job market. I saw people seamlessly move into, you know, virtually recruiting, virtually onboarding, and getting people working through a fully remote working environment. So I think it really comes down to how well prepared the organization is and the practitioner within that organization is to ensure that there's a smooth transition and that there's agility in the system. I don't think that anybody may have fully seen the impact of COVID-19, so I don't know that anyone was really prepared for every step of COVID-19 and the way in which it impacted their organization. But that's why I think agility is most important, that as good as your plans are, they must be agile and they must allow for things to move efficiently.
Now, and picking up on that point of agility, and I'm supposing there are some, you know, young or smaller business or, you know, business entities who may be thinking, geez, man, I'm a small company, I may not survive this. Is it a case that the better organized will survive, and the small and the less organized will not survive, or the bigger companies, the bigger corporate entities will survive this, but the smaller ones will not?
I don't think I can get necessarily a definitive answer to that.
Because
what we're seeing and worldwide is that, you know, small, medium, and large enterprises are finding ways to survive. But it comes down to whether they're willing to maybe change the business model, change how the demographic of people that they were reaching out to before, if they're willing to change in which the nature of their business, lots of things. It really comes down to lots of business decisions as to whether you survive or fail. And I don't think there's one staunch thing that will be the determinant in that failure, but again, agility.
How hard is it to really change a business model, a business trend? Because obviously, well, I say obviously as a layman, so you would correct me as a professional. You know, you kind of think that businesses have a trend. They have a road map that they take. And they follow that, and they probably modify a bit when it comes to certain things. So how hard is it now to do something totally different?
Yeah, because, I mean, it can be quite difficult. Imagine you have a very mature organization whose model has been one way for a very long time, and therefore the systems are built around that model, the way in which they've hired and the way in which they've engaged labor is built around that model, the way in which they, you know, have set up their credit terms with their creditors, et cetera, is built around that model. Undoing that can be very difficult. So if you're very mature, it may be a lot harder. If you are young and your organization is still in its maturing stages, it may be a lot easier. So I think it will depend based on organizational type.
Does this mean there will always be a fallout from, you know, customers or people who do services with these companies because they have to be changing? And even though we as the average consumer, we have to change because, you know, we have to do things, protocols and whatnot, in business, is it hard to get people to respond to the changes?
I think we had a very good test case of that during COVID-19. And let's use some very realistic and relatable examples for when the supermarkets had to change the way in which they allow people to shop. Or, you know, when banks had to change the way in which persons interacted with them. A lot of banks during this period, even though they had it before, they kind of had they created a date and an end date that they would stop all paper-based communications and that, you know, some most functions would happen online. So I don't think it always results in a loss of customers. It may result in a loss of the customer base who can't keep up with what is happening. But I don't think that it results in a total diminishing of your customer base. It also has to do with how well information is shared with the customer to help them understand the change and how to adapt to the change. And I think a lot of businesses have done well in trying to do so during COVID-19, subject to all the other chaos that was going on.
No, it was suggested that a lot of the practices that are being put in place now, service delivery and service response, are some of the measures that companies and corporate entities worldwide have been pushing for a long time. We talked about the online banking and taking services electronically. And mentioning that, would you say that has been a plus in the COVID-19 time, because it would have accelerated a model that seem to have been a bit resistant in the past?
Yes, I think the digitization of a lot of systems and a lot of processes and functions, you know, have really been a big benefit of COVID. And something, you know, that I'm sure we will all look back and say, well, this could have happened ever since in Beijing parlance, but it's happening now, and I think we can hold on to it and be grateful that it's happening now. It's happening in the government entities. It's happening with private sector entities, small, large, and medium. So that the digitization effort is really, really good. I think it's important that in the digitization effort that we be cognizant of persons who are differently abled, though. Mm-hmm. And I think for organizations, that is going to be very important because, you know, are they providing audio functions where everything is being digitized online for online banking, for example, so that it helps the visually impaired? How are those things being, you know, or how are they helping to help those people who may be differently able to adapt? But that would be the only thing, or one of the only things I could think of that may be a negative to it. But the digitization is absolutely something that needed to happen, and I'm really grateful to see so many companies, public and private, hold on to it.
So we are in August, nearly 6 months after a national shut down, as I speak. Where are we now as it relates to labor?
I think labor is slowly reintegrating itself into the workforce. Those persons who, of course, had full-time employment before, there's still a huge percentage of people, particularly in specific industries, who remain unemployed or remain on layoff. And that may obtain until the end of the year. Even with the fantastic initiative that is the 12-month stamp, you know, we are hopeful that brings at least, you know, a certain percentage of influx in air traffic, and that may translate into the tourism industry. But I don't think there have been any projections that say that's going to happen in any phenomenal way before the end of the year. So I think while labor is slowly creeping out, or at least labor that had employment prior to COVID-19 is slowly creeping out, and they're getting short time or short hours, etc., we still have quite a way to recovery.
As an HR association, locally and regionally, how are you placed to respond to what is going on now?
Well, what we did very early during COVID-19 is to take all of our sessions online, and rather than charging, we opened them up to the public for free. We formed a number of strategic partnerships with places like Profiles Caribbean, and, you know, we also had a number of sessions with the BEC, et cetera, where we really teamed up to share not just information to HR practitioners, but information to business leaders, to CEOs on labor legislation, both nationally and regionally, on how the region can rebound. We also had a session with the International Labor Organization and regional office and their employer representative. We also had an economist on one of our sessions. So we really were very early during COVID, and we continue to do the same, provide information, provide sessions, provide discussion for and forums where people can have really proactive thoughts and proactive steps around what happens next. So very early in COVID, we were telling people how to get through, and then we've changed the message now about to recovery. What happens next? How do we get past this, both nationally and regionally?
In a COVID-19 environment, is there a morale, I use morale to suggest that, is it difficult to manage productivity in a time like this?
It can be. I think if you didn't have the proper systems in place prior to COVID-19, and particularly in organizations where they've had to move remote and they're accustomed to really micromanaging, it can be difficult to manage productivity. But it may not be so difficult for others who have the systems in place. Now, there are some industries like manufacturing where productivity is about output and tangible, you know, output. So productivity is either there or it isn't. So I really think that depends on where they go ahead.
So as an HR organization, would you be looking to put one system in place that would deal with productivity and morale, or would you cater it towards specifically to whatever situation occurs within a specific organization or company?
No, productivity measurements and things are always skewed towards what the organization needs to measure, because every organization will be different. So we always recommend that it is skewed towards that, and we actually had a session on that during COVID-19, you know, measuring your productivity and how that can be done. So it's very important for people to be guided by what their organization needs to measure and how they're measuring it, and not just use generic measuring tools or tactics, because you may be measuring the wrong thing.
And I'm sure that working from home, which has now become, I don't want to say a popular feature, but an option in doing business or working, would it be hard to measure productivity in an online work environment?
Not where the right systems are in place. And again, that comes down to what you're measuring, but absolutely not where the right systems are in place. And even if you didn't have them pre-COVID, there are very reasonable systems that can be purchased. There are very reasonable ways around managing productivity, even in a remote setting. So I would say that can be made easy once you have the right system.
The idea that this will continue for a very long time, and we don't really have an idea when there will be a vaccine, or when you will have to start wearing masks, or when you have to start working from home. Can you really adequately plan ahead for what we do not really know is coming next?
I think people have to do the best they can with what they have. And a lot of the decisions that had to be made during COVID-19 were made on the fly. You know, when our prime minister came out and she may have made an announcement that would impact businesses the next day, businesses had to be agile enough to do that. I think we have been guided very well by the government during this entire period. And we are now at a stage that we can at least plan month by month versus week by week. So that helps. And do what you can with what you have. And that's as simple as you could put it right now.
Because COVID-19 seems to be affecting countries differently. Some countries are, their borders are open, others are not. And some countries would have started to somewhat resume their workforce. Is it hard to plan a response as an organization locally and regionally across such wide geographical locations?
Of course it's hard, but it's not impossible.
And hence why I say, you know, you do the best you can with what you have. So the more people remain informed about what's happening in their industries and the peripheral information, what can impact their industries, the more reading you're doing, the more that you're keeping your ear to the ground with the announcement that the government and the subsequent ministries are making, the more information you have to at least help your decision making. I don't think there's anything else that could be done at this juncture other than hold what you have and do what you can with what you have.
And looking at, because you mentioned that it's a regional organization. So it means that...
No. HORMAB is national.
Okay, national. Mm-hmm. But you just started a regional...
is a regional, and
right.
We are a strategic partner to that regional, but we're not the founders of that regional entity or anything.
Are there any trends that are happening regionally and internationally as it relates to business and labor that you would say are best-case scenarios that Barbados can pull from right now?
Sure. And I mean, I have to be very honest in that. I think Barbados has been very forward-thinking with one, its Social Security benefit scheme, which has really resulted in a situation where businesses can make plans or step-by-step plans for reintegrating their workforce. So there is something in Germany that is very similar to our short-time benefit program here in Barbados. And what the short-term benefit really allows businesses to do at this juncture is to, you know, bring people back out on shortened hours and they still have that supplemental through the government. And that's just one means by which it can be done. But there are lots of ways in which I think trend-wise, we have the basis here in Barbados to do things well in comparison to what's happening internationally. I don't see any huge differences in what has been done in the better places versus what we are doing here. We have, you know, reintegrated persons into the workforce safely. We are very soon on the cusp of sending persons back, our children back into school safely. We are keeping on top of testing. Businesses are being guided by the national protocols. And we have a COVID implementation unit who is really stringent monitoring what's happening nationally. So I don't think there are any trends that we have not practically seen and lived through in COVID in Barbados, not any best practice trends. We really are a best practice scenario in most cases.
Indeed. I agree and I support that 100%. And dealing in the business world, we know that a lot depends on what happens regionally and internationally. Businesses do not operate in a vacuum. And because so many other countries and businesses in other territories may or may not be functioning, some businesses may have to look at other ways of getting through. If they're not able to make that linkage that their customer making with other companies overseas and whatnot, how do you suggest companies navigate an environment like that?
I can really look at how your business model can be flexed. And one of the biggest examples that I saw very early in the COVID-19 scenario, and I'm hopeful that I can call names, but one of the bigger examples we saw here with Sagicor. And we saw them flip their claims process online. We saw them flip their customer service process virtually. And it happened very, very quickly. The messages were coming out. If you were a consumer with them, you were constantly updated, et cetera. So it really is about how you can, and they did not change any of their core services. They even introduced some new services, but they didn't change any of their core services. They just changed how they delivered. Now, another example I saw, and this was international, was, you know,
Airbnb.
Yeah. So I remember very early in COVID-19, Airbnb announced that they were going to change their strategic direction because they had embarked on, pre-COVID-19, they had embarked on a process to kind of go into a new area of business, but subject to COVID-19, they had to retract that. And unfortunately, they had to let a number, I mean, I think it was, there were hundreds of persons who were impacted by that. And they had to really change direction very, very quickly. And that was one of the more strategic direction changes that I saw from a large organization. And rather than waiting very late in the game to do it, they did it very, very early because they projected that the type of travelers that they would need to service that element of their business would not exist as a result of COVID. And therefore, they needed to redirect efforts and money elsewhere. And that's the kind of thinking that any small, medium, or large enterprise can kind of employ. If you don't have a service that can necessarily survive post-COVID-19, how can you re-envision re-envision that service, or how can you create a new service or product that the consumer would want? And I think for an organization that's global, they really executed that quite swiftly and got the strategic brains thinking quite quickly.
Well, we've come to the point where we have to talk about the silver lining, because we have to give hope. We have to believe that Barbados, the region, and indeed the world, will come out from this the better. Where do you see the silver lining coming? Or both?
I certainly can't tell you when. Certainly cannot tell you when, but I can tell you that I think from a labor perspective, it will come, particularly for young people, it will come via the different opportunities that will present themselves nationally, regionally, and internationally to export their labor. And I think that's one of the big labor opportunities that we will see. A lot of businesses are going to be looking to go global. Well, so they're looking to go big while remaining small. And by doing that, they will be looking for talent globally and sourcing that talent via business-to-business partnerships. So I think particularly for young people who were impacted by very hard unemployment figures even before COVID-19, it's going to be important to keep your ears to the ground for the opportunities that will exist all across the globe in a way that you can export your talent and not necessarily have to be tied to any one organization or thing. And I mean, it may be foreign to some generations before who, of course, know and appreciate the stability of the type of labor engagements that we had before, but it does not mean that there is not lots of opportunity in the new type of labor engagements that will definitely surface coming up. So that's one of the bigger positives I see coming out of this.
Where do you see the biggest fallout coming? Because in every reality, there's a balance.
Of course, there's lots of, there could be, you know, fallout, as there will be less stability around jobs. And I think we've already seen that. There may be less full-time employment being offered. And if you look at the statistics being published by the International Labour Organization, you know, many persons who have found themselves out of work and out of full-time or part-time work are highly unlikely to find themselves going back into full-time and part-time work. So I think the lack of stability will be the biggest fallout when we look at the labor market. But even in the lack of stability, there is some hope because people can learn and hopefully cultivate the ability to see that their skills don't need to belong to one person, but they can spread those skills worldwide.
Do you think that this is fertile ground for entrepreneurship?
Yeah, it definitely is. But I think, and you were asking about fallout, one of the things that we regionally will have to become accustomed to is, you know, being our own boss in the wider sense. So we, in traditional employment, persons have their bosses dealing with their statutory obligations and their tax obligations and those kind of things. If you are going to be exporting your labor, you need to register your business. You need to move from the informal to the formal. When that is most feasible for you. So that's kind of the lagging effects that I see it having on labor. Helping persons to understand, you know, when do they really formalize this business? How do I formalize my business? And there are fantastic organizations out there, because entrepreneurship is not just this. Of course, you have ideas, but execution is usually the hardest thing. So it's not just this thing that happens overnight. And 10 Habitat is one of the fantastic initiatives I see out there, really helping entrepreneurs to understand the completeness of entrepreneurship and how it functions. There's the Barbados Entrepreneurship Foundation. And those are at least two very good organizations that I know that exist that help people take their ideas from being an idea to fruition and to being a sustainable business. So I really would say yes. It's a seedbed for entrepreneurship, but let's do entrepreneurship the right way, sustainable way, because you don't want, 50,000 new businesses being registered this year, and by the end of 2021, you have a paltry maybe 100 people remaining just because the idea was not properly executed.
Well, Ms. Bradford, I think we're out of time. And let me wish your organization, success, because these are uncharted waters. And I don't think anybody has any navigation plan or plot on how we do this. And I think that your organization has its work cut out for it. And we're really hoping to see and hear many, many things and many more things of what your organization will be doing to help labor and to help the labor market in Barbados and the wider community in navigating COVID-19. Thank you for coming on the program.
Thank you very much.